On today's episode of the Glad Trad Podcast, I'm joined by my friend Nick Cavazos, aka the Traditional Thomas, to talk about Latin mass closures, transgender funeral services, and his documentary that he's just released, which, by the way, you should all totally watch. A great thank you to our patrons and our YouTube members here to help make this show possible. Go on over to patreon.com/GladTradPodcast or go on and click the member button on YouTube if you would like to support the show and also get a lot of really fun perks along the way. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. And without further ado, this is the Glad Trad Podcast.
This is the light which shall give revelation to the Gentiles, the mystery of God in the world, but the salvation of the world.
How's it going, everybody? This is Jordan Pacheco from the Glad Trad Podcast. I hope you're doing well. Man, I am so happy. I'm going to start right off to the races, because my good friend, the Traditional Thomas, Nick Cavazos, is back again to talk about a bunch of fun things that have been happening in the past couple of weeks. But first off, Nick, always a pleasure to have you on. How have you been doing? I know you've been doing so much traveling and adventuring and everything.
I'm doing good. I'm kind of exhausted. I literally got back into Texas, essentially after a month being gone, 3.5 weeks in Oklahoma, and then a half-ish plus week in the state of Massachusetts, which is very different from the Deep South in many, many ways, both politically, economically, and all that fun jazz. But I'm glad to be back in Texas and glad to be here, finally hanging out online for once in like a month. So it's fun.
Well, you went to the Yankee North, is what I was going to say, which is very strange for a Texan guy like you.
No, it is very, very strange. It's kind of like, I don't know if anyone in your audience lives in like the Boston area. I was pretty much in the Boston area, and I feel like everybody around Boston just kind of wants to tell you what their political views are unsolicited. So it's like every single yard has, you know, an American plus Ukraine flag or a BLM flag or a gay flag, just literally everywhere. And then you're just like, hi, I just wanted just to get gas. Like, you know, why are you doing this to me? So it's pretty bad. Plus everyone there is just so wealthy, like insanely wealthy, you know, like Martha's Vineyard level wealthy. And so you're just like, yeah, everyone here probably works for the teachers union and wants to tell me what they think. So I'll just go see the historical places and then go home.
Well, we're happy. Colorado is a very split sort of a state. So we've been leaning blue more and more, but there are these really, it's really because of these two cities, Denver and Boulder. Really, there are these hot spots of good conservatism. So though I live here in the Denver Tech Center, don't hold that against me. There's a cowboy hat hanging over there because I'm still a country boy through and through, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. So before we get off to the races, I also wanted to turn my audience onto the fact that you were at, you went to a monastery not too long ago and you actually shot a documentary and I watched it all the way through. I think it's enjoyable. So tell us a little bit about that and then I'll be sure to spin it over with a link down below so people can go and watch it themselves.
Hey, I appreciate you watching it. Yeah. So long story short, if anyone watches my show, that you know, the Thomism is kind of like the historical staple that we always go back to. And basically, long story short, I went to Clear Creek Monastery, which is in Oklahoma. That's where I was also this last month. And I shot a documentary that the basic gist of it was, what would it be like to go back and to study under Aquinas, study the thought of St. Thomas in a setting that was more or less something that he would have wrote the Summa in. And so I went to the monastery for 1 month and I read through the whole Summa cover to cover. I had already had a lot of exposure to St. Thomas's Summa through personal reading, as well as through academic learning it in my undergrad, as well as in some master's work, as well as teaching a bits for like Aquinas clubs and things like that in the past. But actually getting to sit down and read from it cover to cover in that setting was absolutely phenomenal. It definitely gave me not just a new, but I would also say like a more deep respect and profound love for the Catholic faith, that it's just so, in a good sense, rational, but also mysterious. And so, yeah, if anyone wants to go and watch it, the documentary is called Salvation by the Light. And don't worry, I don't explain question by question all of St. Thomas's Summa. It's way more of a just a reflection on the spot style documentary. And it was awesome. It was a lot of fun to make.
Yeah, there's only one critique I had, and that's that you opted to shoot it yourself instead of, I don't know, have one of your DP editor friends come along with you, but whatever. I can forgive that this time.
So true. So, hey, you know, maybe one day there'll be a part two or something like that. I don't know. But I mean, if you want to come hang out with me for a monastery for a month, I'll definitely let you know. So it's definitely not for the light of heart, because I think like 3 or 4 days in, it starts to really crash. Wow, I am not leaving. Like, I'm staying here.
So you're a third order Dominican, but you never pursue religious life like that.
Yeah, nothing like that. And it's interesting because every time, up until like the last 2 or 3 times, I've been to this monastery like 15 times now. But for like a good dozen plus, every time I went, I was thinking, okay, you know, am I going to have like this, you know, real moment where I recognize I am called to religious life? And the last 3 or 4 times, I've recognized I am not called to religious life at all. And so, yeah, I think that is a, unless, of course, you know, I just have a radical shift somewhere down the line, I think that that door is pretty much shut for me.
Get married, Nick. We know we need more Cavazos running around, more Cavazos and Pachecos to make the world go around, you know?
Way more Cavazos.
That's right. That's right. A whole army. Okay. So I feel for you because I read a news article a couple weeks ago, and I want to clarify. You are in the Diocese of Austin, correct?
Yeah, Diocese of Austin.
Okay, so I saw and I saw this message, and it turns out that your bishop has actually canceled the Latin Mass that you typically go to. So you've been going to a Diocesan Latin Mass at the cathedral. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. When I came into the church in 2019, or actually was kind of kicking the tires, and then came in 2020. It started there at St. Mary's Cathedral in Austin, Texas. It's literally like 2 blocks from the state capitol, historic Gothic church that was built by both Irish and Hispanic immigrants who kind of came together to build Our Lady a really beautiful church. And yeah, I just remember like that was the first place I've ever was exposed to the traditional Mass. And so that was really the moment that I just said, like, wow, I need to continue to investigate the faith and look more into this. And so been there literally since 2019, altar served pretty much every Sunday, as well as many times throughout the week, you know, driving up an hour plus every single Sunday and Holy Day of Obligation plus many times throughout the week through crazy Austin traffic. Any of y'all who live in Austin, you know what I mean? And to see this completely blown up was, yeah, really sad to say the absolute least. Really,
what is
really sad.
Is this just more Traditionis Custodes? Did your bishop, was it something that was on trial run, or were there other forces that kind of determined that?
Yeah, I'll tell you basically everything I know in short form. So short form, when Traditionis Custodes came out, the bishop, Bishop Vasquez, he, to describe him, he's not, you know, I would say again, by today's standards, which I think are flawed, he's not what you would call a trad. He's definitely not what you would call a liberal. He would definitely be, I would just say, kind of a middle of the road, kind of status quo bishop. And I'm not saying that again to like disparage him, but I'm also saying at the same time, there's not a lot of like stellar qualities of calling out evil in common form. So when Traditionis Custodes came out, he invoked, what was it, Canon 86, and basically just said, you know, this would affect my diocese in a negative way. There are 5 places that offer the traditional Mass in my diocese at the current juncture, so this would be damaging. And the good thing is that he let us know literally that, you know, I forget what it was, July 16th, right? Feast of Our Lady of Mount Carmel when it came out. I forget what day of the week that was, but that Sunday he immediately told us, like, yo, I got you guys. Letter sent out for all of us. It was pretty immediate. So that was nice in that respect. Well, it was about 3 or 4 months later, we started seeing on certain vigils of major feast days, there were starting to be ads for a Latin Novus Ordo. And we heard rumors from the chancery that what the long-term plan was is that Bishop Vasquez was going to try to wean Catholics to go on, traditional Catholics to go on that. And for 2 reasons. One, because I think he strategically knew that time was limited. But 2, even though he works with the Society of St. Pius X, which I'm glad he does, I think he knew that for financial reasons, we, being the former traditional community at the cathedral, make up over 70% of the collection.
Oh my gosh,
so
really?
A huge percentage of the collection was from us. We were a really large portion. So he starts introducing some of these Latin Novus Ordos. We have, at that time, we had 2 priests that were basically facilitating the Masses for us, both of which I don't really have any ill will toward. However, one of the individuals very much so was kind of a product of the diocesan status quo structure with all of its unfortunate baggage that it curtails. And so he would, in his sermons, start to give things that were a little bit worrisome, right? Basically kind of indifferentizing the two masses all down to an aesthetics point of view. And he was trying to get people to go more and more to these vigils. Well, the lay faithful were essentially having none of it. Like, I mean, unless you're really, really new and you know, obviously starting to learn things, for many people who've been involved for a long time, you're not going to get hoodwinked by aesthetics. It's never been about aesthetics. It's not been about, yeah, primarily.
That helps, but that's not the main core.
Exactly. It's not the core. It's not the core of the diamond. It's you know, the shell, if you will, around it. And so trying to get us to do that really never worked. It kind of came less and less. And so then for, you know, the next essentially like year and a half, 2 years, it was pretty quiet. Like nothing for the most part happened. This priest was moved out. Another priest was moved in. And he was, I would say, you know, way more of a theologian than really a pastor. And I don't say that in a bad way, kind of a cool way in some ways, because if you're a theology nerd, you get to have fun conversations. He would say the traditional mass for us. But then eventually, you know, it was just like radio silence. You didn't hear anything. Well, as time went on, right, you had the rescript that came out, which again is funny because if you remember, like for those viewers who watch both of our shows, we covered Traditionalis Custodes like the week it came out.
When it dropped. Oh, that was great.
Like,
yeah,
when it dropped. So if you want to share like fresh review thoughts, go check it out on my show. It's pretty crazy. Yeah, yeah. It's pretty fun. I'd honestly want to go back and see that because we're so young then.
Yeah, I know, right? It's so beautiful.
We're so young and so much has happened since then. But yeah, so when that came out, you know, we thought everything was done. And then basically that document, it was interesting, basically said, yeah, yo, bishops, it's up to you guys to figure out if you want this to be a thing or not. Here are the stipulations. It can't be in a parish church, etc. Well, a bunch of bishops invoke Canon 86. And then the rescript's just like, well, psych, actually, when we say that you guys have full power of the liturgy, what we really mean is you only have the power to shut it down now. And if you don't do it and hold on to it, we'll shut it down for you, right? That's pretty much what it came out to be. So when the rescript came out, all the traditional sacraments at the cathedral were banned, right? So we weren't doing the traditional marriages, traditional baptisms, etc. There were ways that we could kind of try to facilitate and help people. So for instance, if someone wanted to get married in the traditional rite, they would have to have the new rite formulas and everything, but they could have the traditional mass after that. So the pastors, to their credit, were trying to be very pastoral. However, that, I guess, was not enough because about 2 or 3 weeks ago, right, when I was at the monastery, I get a text from my friends basically saying, yo, have you seen what has taken place? And at the moment, I did not know what was going on, but they told me, yeah, the traditional mass has been axed from the parish. How it happened, apparently, according to multiple people I've talked to, is we had two masses, one 7:30 a.m. low mass and a 3:30 p.m. high mass. At the end of the 7:30 low mass, after the last gospel and the prayers after low mass, the priest who was officiating said, I need everyone to sit back down. And so everyone sat back down, and the main priest of the vicar, if you will, of the whole parish came out of the sacristy and he said, I have a letter from the bishop. And my friends, it said at that moment, they kind of knew what was about to be happened. And for the next, you know, essentially minute, it is just three paragraphs of basically, here's what Pope Francis wants, here's what we need to do. And then one paragraph of, I'm moving everything to a Latin Novus Ordo. But then, in my opinion, again, I try to be very, very understanding to my bishop in many ways. But one of the worst paragraphs was at the very, very end when he basically comes out and says, you know, through this experience, we will be able to have a greater and deeper and more profound appreciation for the richness and beauty of the ordinary form, the Mass of Paul VI.
Which
to me, it's just like, okay, aside from the fact that, again, this is just cope. We've heard this forever, literally decades upon decades upon decades. Our grandparents who saw this happen are, you know, all passing away at this point. It's just ridiculous. Like no one actually believes this unless you're, you know, I would say maybe, and I don't say this disparagingly, but perhaps uneducated in the subject.
Right.
And so therefore, right, my friends, right, they received that gut punch right after Holy Communion, essentially, that it was going to be shut down. Well, the bishop gave us till March 19th, and March 19th, right, Feast of St. Joseph, and it's ironic because the community there is called the St. Joseph Latin Mass Community, And so I was, again, out of town, right? So I was out of town for all this, but I have decided I'm just not going to go back for multiple reasons. One, because to me, to go back and basically participate for 3 or 4 more weeks would be admitting surrender, which I'm not going to do.
Not in your conquistador blood.
Exactly. It's just like, to me, it's ridiculous. I'm not gonna do this. But then also at the same time, what's really interesting to me about this situation is that the bishop, again, to his credit, right, he allowed us in the cathedral, which is his see, right? It was great. But he also visited every single parish in the diocese, every religious community in the diocese, even, you know, starter-up communities, right, that were really, really fresh, really new, even Eastern Catholic communities, right? He visited them, visited military chapels and all that stuff. He visited every single community in the diocese except one.
Yeah, and that was you guys.
Which to me, again, was telling, right? We were in his see, which means it wasn't like we're far away, right, from where he's sleeping, but yet he refused to show up. And to me, again, I think that this goes to show, like, even for all the pastoral sensitivities around this, it's very much so like a dad who's like, okay, cool, I'll let you live here, but I ain't going to talk to you until it's time for you to get out of the house. And so that's the short version of it. And of course, I can tell you what's going to happen post, but that's the short version of
it. There'll be plenty of time. Brother, I'm praying so hard for you guys and everybody. I made a video a couple of years ago about those experiencing Latin Mass closures. Man, there's so much to unpack. And I just want to say this, honestly, I'm kind of sick of being the bastard stepchild.
So true.
You know, and I don't get it. Like, first off, just for our audience listening, for those who are in the know, for those who are learning in the know, the difference between the new Mass and the extraordinary form, the Latin Mass, the TLM, is not just a matter of language. I actually really wish that it was just a matter of language, because that would be way easier. I think, for instance, that the Anglican Ordinariate is probably how the Novus Ordo should look. I have no desire to squash the Anglican Ordinariate. I have no desire to squash Byzantine Divine Liturgy in the vernacular. It's not about language. Language is important. Latin is the language of the Roman Church. It binds us. But that's not ultimately what it's about. We talked about this a little earlier. The reality is that we're talking about very deep changes in the Missal. Nick has done such a tremendous series going through the new Mass, very methodically dissecting it. And you've actually helped me arrive at my position, Nick, which is the position of the society, right? Which is that the new Mass is valid, but it's deficient. That when you actually hold up the new Mass and the old Mass, and COVID did this. COVID was such a beautiful example of this. You hold them up together and you just go, yeah, it's not that I don't think that the new Mass has anything going for it, but everything is just a scrap from the traditional Latin Mass. Even a low Mass, it's evident. It's actually evident in the Missal. Mass of the Ages episode 2 has that wonderful, terrible graphic of what the changes actually look like. And for my dad, for instance, who doesn't go to Latin Mass, that sort of thing, but he has very traditional heart, that was horrifying to him. They just didn't know. Our parents' generation, our grandparents' generation, they never knew. So for a bishop to come out and to equate them in this way, oh, it's about the Latin. So we're going to give you the Latin Novus Ordo. That, yes, trads, you're being gaslit. You know what I mean? Like suddenly, no, it's not just language. I don't just do this for aesthetics. Something fundamentally is different when you have prayers at the foot of the altar and those are removed. The just huge, vast differences, and it's all just reduction. So I'm sorry that you've gone through that. And I wish that you guys were the only ones who've gone through this and will continue to go through this. I hate the fact that normal, average Catholics, people who don't want to be involved in the politics of the church, who are just trying to love the Lord and keep their heads down, are always rent asunder. And this banhammer only goes one way. And I don't know, you know, I don't know your bishops of like you've done. I'm not going to ascribe malice where I don't know, right? But this has been strategy, definitely. And I'm just sick of the fact that I hear all the time from Pope Francis. I hear all the time from all these banhammer bishops in the know that they're being pastoral and prudent and they're wanting to connect with the children, but all this mess. And I just go, no, you're not. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just be real here. Pope Francis is never going to visit the fraternity seminary. He's in Nebraska. He's just not ever going to do it. He doesn't care. He doesn't care if Latin masses explode. He talks all this love about young people. That's not you and me, Nick. We're young people. We're the ones staying, giving our collection, trying to have families, all this kind of stuff. He doesn't care about that. Let's be real. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of the American bishops, I think this quite a bit. I think that there are some that are very bad agents. There are some who are really good agents, and then they get canned. Most bishops are company men. And they try to wiggle a little bit, but really the reality is that we have taken the masculine spine out of so much of the clergy, and they have stopped actually having, I would say, the love that a father should have for his children. And I don't think that it's just the newfangled theology and the new mass to blame for this. I think even as trads, we have to understand what it means for a priest to be, or bishop to be, a spiritual father. And here's an example, right? You guys had a parish, you said 70% of the collection. So even just on an economic scale, it doesn't make any sense that a more company man bishop would just can it. At the end of the day, it's like, no, you guys don't get anything. Sorry, except a letter.
Exactly, 100%. And that's why I told people that if, you know, you see the a lot of trads online, they'll say that they're really confused about what's going on. And I understand, I think, what they mean by that. I think what they mean by that is confusion, sure, but I think a lot of hurt and a lot of anxiety about the future. What people need to realize is that whether we like it or not, the Pope is a politician. And if you start looking at Rome through the lens of politics, it starts to make way more sense. Because I think for a few years, I looked at things more through the lens of a theologian. And so you're like, okay, you know, like, this is what we believe, but yet they're doing this. So like, where's the disconnect, you know? And then you're trying to analyze it almost like a teacher student, where you're just like trying to fix a problem and help out. And you're like, okay, you know, if we just get this done, then everything will be hunky-dory. But if you look at it through the lens of a politician, you say, okay, so these guys, they're at least the people in power, right? They're formed really, really, really close to the council, right? When a lot of the communist infiltration is going on, a lot of the Marxism is starting to be spread around. I mean, you look at a lot of what's going on even in the Nouvelle Theologie, they were questioning even just the nature of what theology is. It wasn't even just stuff like this random concept in scholastic disputation. It was fundamentally like, what is theology? Like, let's take the whole science and redefine the science, right? It's like if you took math and completely redefined it to where it was completely different, it would just make your head spin. So it's like if you look at this and you're like, okay, these guys are formed in this time, and then it's their revolution is in the 60s, right? And then that fresh batch right after the council is sometimes called the most liberal, right? They're oozing with all this garbage in the 70s. You look at that and you're like, okay, Paul VI starts to make way more sense, because like his agenda is he's kind of has these Grima Wormtongue guys list like speaking in his mouth. Bunini's lying to him. He's playing him and the Concilium team, but yet he still pushes it forward. You see also through Father Charles Murr, right, his book, The 33rd Murder in the 33rd Degree, right? They have, you know, Cardinal Gagnon piled stacks upon stacks upon stacks of Freemason names, which, by the way, you can find the whole list of Freemason names, their serial numbers, and their code names, like online in his book and on just in different forums.
Yeah.
Right. You see all these guys that were in charge of like setting up bishops' conferences, all bishop appointments worldwide. You see the Congregation of the Doctrine of Faith. There's Freemasons in that. So there's Freemasons in all the major Roman congregations that were, you know, at one time filled with, you know, scholastic Dominicans, are now just completely overrun by these guys. And so Paul VI starts to make a lot of sense. John Paul II, right, he doesn't sack any of these guys, which is traditional, because like you kind of just go in and put your guys in whenever you enter a new administration. He doesn't sack them. And so then, you know, in 84 with the first indult, and then in 88, you know, in response to Archbishop Lefebvre, he kind of gives these political, you know, bones, if you will, throwing out to the multitude, but it's still with the caveat of like, okay, you can have the TLM, but you have to pretty much accept all of these things. And again, it doesn't address the main concerns of the traditionalist movement. It just basically says, here's the aesthetics, here you go. To his credit, Benedict XVI, again, for all of his faults, because, you know, when you really do read through all of his books, I think he really is a mixed bag. Like, he has a lot of really good stuff that he does right. But then there's other areas where, like, you know, you're reading his discussions on the resurrection, you're like, I don't know, that's kind of questionable. Like, I want to rephrase this. But, you know, it's like he clearly feels guilty. Samorum comes out, right? He was on that previous team back under John Paul II, a team of nine that went and investigated, has the TLM been abolished? And their conclusion was no. He said it flat out in Sonorum. He was like, okay, you know, everyone can have the TLM. And he does this as not just a concession, a just concession to the SSPX, right? You only got Sonorum because of the SSPX, but also because I think he was guilty. But then you see how much like the Italian bishops hated it, Cardinal yep. Roach. Right, he absolutely hated it. He regulated the TLM in his diocese in the UK to this like rinky-dink airport chapel. It was just like horrible. And so then when Pope Francis comes on the scene, he starts to make sense. It's like, okay, you know, these are critical political appointments. Why would he promote a guy who regulated the TLM to a rinky-dink airport yeah. chapel to be in charge of all liturgy, replacing Cardinal Seurat, right, who's way much more of a Ratzingerian aesthetics lover of traditional liturgy? Why does he put in like a pro-abortion feminist in charge mm-hmm. of the Pontifical Academy of Life? Why does he get rid of, you know, like the really, I would just say like more orthodox sounding theologians from the now formerly Holy Office and puts in a guy who, let's just be honest, you would want a zillion miles from your children in catechism class?
Let me
class
kiss you with the kisses of my mouth. The stuff for more.
It's like I get in trouble in catechism class for teaching like mortal sin if you die unrepentantly goes to hell and that, you know, sodomy is a sin and things like that. But I don't think he would be in trouble for those things. He'd probably be in charge of trouble for the other issues. So it's like it makes sense. They're in a program. They've never addressed the traditionalist concerns to begin with. And this is why I do think, you know, fundamentally that all the Ecclesia Dei communities, and again, I don't have any ill will toward them, and the diocesan world, I honestly think are either A, going to just be, you know, regulated into oblivion, or B, just eventually abolished. And this is why time and time again, Archbishop Lefebvre continues to be proven right.
Right.
Not perfect, not inerrant, but true because of, I think, what he foresaw. Because again, he saw in an 84, right? Okay, you can have the TLM, but you have to do this. Or in 88, you can have the TLM,
yeah,
but you have to
do this. Yeah, just celebrate one new mass. Come on, baby, let's go.
Exactly. And it never works out. And so this is why, you know, eventually I do think we'll get to the point where in diocesan settings, it's going to be so desperate that they're going to have to eventually come and address our concerns. Eventually. Yeah.
So I want to get to something you said earlier about your bishop. You said that your bishop works with the society in his diocese. What does that tangibly mean, actually?
Sure. So over 1,200 bishops work actively with the SSPX. This is something that a lot of people don't know. But after 2017, when the Year of Jubilee, Pope Francis granted faculties for confessions and marriages worldwide, a lot of bishops, to their credit, right, accepted that call to work with them. Now, one quick note is this. For the sacrament of penance and for the sacrament of holy matrimony, ordinarily, it requires the bishop's approval for a priest to be a legitimate minister of those sacraments in order for those sacraments to even be valid, right? We talk about, for instance, in the context of the Mass, how validity is a low bar, and it's true. It's the most important bar in many ways, but it is not an absolute when it comes to holy matrimony and penance. It requires not just for it to be, you know, valid because of your ordination, but it requires that you have to be signed off by the bishop. Well, that doesn't mean that the SSPX's confessions and holy matrimony were invalid up to that time. They received from the church directly what is called extraordinary jurisdiction, which we can talk about if you want to get into that. If you don't want to, there's definitely a lot of articles that are out there.
We'll come back, I promise.
for that, because it's like it's a interesting subject. But regardless, in 2017, when they received ordinary faculties, most bishops around the world hearkened to their request. So where I live, right, I live basically on the southern tip of the Diocese of Austin. There's an SSPX mission chapel that is in Austin that meets twice a month. But then there's a much larger SSPX chapel a little bit south of me in San Antonio. This is where I'm going now, that meets multiple times a week, right? It's way more of an established parish, et cetera. Well, both Bishop Gustavo in the Diocese of San Antonio, who he's an arch liberal. He actually kicked out like Mother Angelica's nun back in the day. Oh, like he's that liberal.
Goodness.
And Bishop Vasquez in Austin, they have both actively work with the SSPX priests in the area for both marriages and confession, right? So they've signed off on all of those things. which has been very good because I do think it at least calms the scruples maybe of some souls who haven't really read about, for instance, extraordinary jurisdiction. But yeah, it's something that's good that it happens. And so as an example, one of my friends this last year in May, I believe, got married and, you know, he had the full approval of the local bishop giving, you know, faculties to the SSPX priest for that. So
was it just the marriage as faculties are granted, or is it also the nuptial mass therein?
It's both. Yeah, it's both. And so
this is
this is where you get into, like, you know, again, for the the true naysayers against the SSPX, you really turn into Pharisees because you fall into this weird world of where it's like, okay, so, you know, this priest, he has the, you know, the faculties to do the nuptial blessing.
I love Bishop Schneider's explanation. He was on Taylor Marshall's podcast once talking about this. And he was like, how is it that you have a grant of partial faculty? And at what point does that partial expire? Like, what sense does this make for us? And goodness. Yeah.
That's exactly a great point. And it becomes ridiculous when you're like, okay, so this is now illicit when you step out of the confessional, but when you walk into the confessional, it is licit. And this is, again, where it's like, for a lot of people who do have qualms, and they'll say stuff like, well, you know, you have to have the approval of your local bishop. Again, ordinarily, I would say, sure. But then when your bishop is also at the same time, like, for instance, mine, allowing inter-religious prayer gatherings in the cathedral, also allows interreligious marriages openly, right? So it's like in the same place where the traditional mass was happening on Sundays, they were having, you know, quote, Catholic Jewish weddings with the whole chuppah and everything right there in front of the altar, right? And no issue. And you can bring in the rabbis to do their work. We've seen multiple times advertisements for Catholics to go and join in prayers with both the Jews and the Protestants for various things. And so it's like, okay, these laws, which are positive law, human-made, man-made laws, which are good, right, they can, according to St. Thomas, be used in an ill way. And so when a law starts to actually do more damage than do what a law is supposed to do, which is establishing the common good, what is the common good, right? In this context, it's that people would practice the actual and authentic Catholic faith. Well, if that law is preventing you, and it's forcing you to go to a Protestantized mass, or it's forcing you to say things like, well, it isn't really an issue if all of these things go on inside of your parish, then my friend, that's not the purpose of the law, and it's starting to be abused, right? Go to a mass in which you're actually going to be able to get the whole and authentic Catholic faith.
Right. I love what you said there, and I want to contrast, of course, our experience of the mass and our diocese closing with another piece of news that's developed, but I just want to say this real quick. I've had a great development in my own life on how I approach it. I go to a fraternity church. I love the fraternity. One of the reasons I love the fraternity is because I feel like they're the ones who have most consistently exposed me to the traditional Latin Mass. Mm-hmm. So there's not this sectarianism that people talk about. And I'm not as naive as like, oh, the clans just all got to unite all the time. I'm just saying I like authentic diversity in the church. I tell people this all the time. I love the sister rites. I have no desire to Latinize the Byzantines. If anything, I just keep telling them, just use your own, just go back to your OG Slavonic and other languages, guys. Like your musicality is built for it. But I have no desire to do that. I have no desire to go after the Anglican Ordinariate. I'm very, very encouraging because Mass is not just in my area, but Mass is in the areas of my family, such as New Mexico. I can't tell you how many Novus Ordos I've seen in different places that are suddenly ad orientem. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, good, okay, that's the right direction. I can work with this, right? Mm-hmm. Priest comes out in the blog cassock, wants to do outer anthem. I'm like, okay, I want to encourage positively priests who are really trying to figure out how they can get to the traditional Latin Mass, because that's inevitably where it leads to.
Exactly.
But I honestly, like, if I heard someone was celebrating Latin Mass in the most rinky-dink hotel with a priest who's been kicked out of three dioceses, but still, like, hasn't done anything sinful, but just, you know, has been, you know, he wants to say the TLM, and maybe this because I'm so sanguine, so scrupulosity isn't really my presumptions much more highly, but I'm just like, listen, I can tell people and their families are just trying to love the Lord and they're trying to raise their children or themselves Catholic. And we should not be hindered from this sort of thing. And that's what's happening time and time again, right? You have Catholics who really are good and they're trying and they just keep being pulled out and told that should they attend the traditional Latin Mass with this group or this group, that they're bad Catholics, that the interreligious prayer circle at the cathedral is good. That's good Catholicism. But to attend Mass with the Society of Pius X, for instance, That's bad Catholicism. And you're somehow increasing this division. You're hurting the body of Christ. And I don't know, Nick. I mean, I just think that God looks up and his law reigns over man's law. And I just think he's riding straight with these crooked lines. You said earlier, like, it's not that Lefebvre is perfect. It's not that Lefebvre is inerrant. But every day it's like, yeah, Lefebvre was right. And that mm-hmm. doesn't mean that you have to agree to every single conclusion. There's room for disagreement. But you know what? Dang it. On this point, he saw a crisis in the church coming. He did a very, very bold thing. And that's paying dividends for the not just the traditional community, but for the church as large, because we keep revisiting the fact that we have to settle these issues.
Yeah, 100%. The analogy I like to think about is St. Paul and St. Barnabas. Like, whenever they got into a really bad spat, right, in the Acts of the Apostles, right, they got so vehemently mad at each other for good reason. It wasn't like they were just, like, overcome in some petty squabble, but, like, for good reasons that they, you know, split and they went their separate ways. But what God did was he allowed the gospel to go in two different directions and convert even a greater multitude.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes how it's, like, I look at the situation between the society and the fraternity and the other groups is that, you know, while, again, I have my criticisms of, I would say, like, certain principles in Ecclesia Dei communities, at the same time, I'm like, well, I can obviously affirm the good in what is going on because more people are being exposed to the traditional mass. A lot of priests, even if their organization doesn't admit it, is going to, you know, do the right thing at the end of the day if they're called to carpet on, you know, saying the new mass, etc. So it's like there's a lot of good stuff, and you're right. It's like I would rather go to, like, in my context, you know, the society priest, the very brief version of his story, it's like he was kicked out of the diocese of Houston Galveston back in, like, the early 2000s for two reasons. One, saying the TLM. And basically before he just started saying it in his parish, and that was enough for the bishop to be like, get out of here. But two, he was also one of the main canon lawyers for their marriage tribunals, and he was giving very, very, very few annulments because he was going by old standards. He was actually examining and investigating, and that was enough for the bishop to say, get out of here. So it's like, okay, would I rather have a guy who's, like, based when it comes to liturgy and marriages, but he's in a hotel room, or this beautiful cathedral, but at the same time, this priest is going to yoke arm in arm with a rabbi on Monday after saying the TLM, or now the traditional Novus Ordo, whatever that means, and he's going to go with the synagogue service the next day. It's a beautiful church, but it's not worth it in the end.
Well, I want, for obvious reasons now, very selfish reasons, I want a priest who is based on my liturgy and very truthful on annulments. And that's all I will say about that.
100%.
So I wanted, when I saw this story pop up, you were like the first person I thought of because I knew you'd have something to say. I was waiting for, if you were not traveling, for you to talk about this on your channel. But meanwhile, out of good old Tejas and in New York, this happened a week or 2 weeks ago. February 19th is when this article I'm looking at. I'm going to share my screen here. 1 second. So I know that there are a lot of Catholics who say this. By the way, obviously, this is a Glad Trad podcast, and we have a point here. We're just talking about a tale of two churches here today. But the good thing, remember, dear listeners and viewers, is that we know that there will be a Triumph of the Immaculate Heart. So one day, God willing, we won't see as many of these ridiculous headlines. Also, before we get into the fun here, a real honest Mad Trad segment, Nick, which you haven't had on a long time on the show. A good reminder for everyone to also keep Bishop Vasquez in your prayers, right? And not just him, but the whole of the bishopric for the United States, especially. I mean, there's just immense pressure inside and outside. And a lot of bishops can rise and face it, and then they get cut. And then there are a lot of bishops who are just trying to do what they think is right, even if that really is harmful. But they just need prayers. And we should not stop praying for even those who persecute us. Okay. Nick, I know that you saw this, but I'm looking at an article previous. But anyway, long story short, there was this guy who's lived his life as an atheistic woman, let's say, and he died in some way. He's gone by the name of Cecilia Gentili down here. But anyway, he had the organizations of the trans community, not just around New York, but other places, kind of organized his funeral. They wanted to use the beautiful St. Patrick's Cathedral right there in New York. This is Cardinal Dolan's territory. And now, to be a little bit fair to the cathedral before we tear into them, They did say the organizer of the funeral, I was reading an article earlier, said that they kind of deceived the diocese in what their intentions were. But the fact that we have had all this fallout afterwards. So anyway, the cathedral was packed with all manner of LGBTQ in the nth degree. And there's some language on this, people, but I want us to watch this short clip here, Nick, and then I want us to talk about it because your Latin Mass is being shut down in a cathedral, right? In the seat of seats when it comes to Catholics in Austin. But meanwhile, this is what's going on in New York. Let's have some fun.
That no one is saying you cannot do it. It's the puta, it's the gran puta.
And there you see it. That is the entirety of a Catholic cathedral. People who are watching or people who are listening in.
Esta puta, esta gran puta, la Santa Cecilia, la madre de todas las putas. Hoy te decimos hasta pronto.
Yeah, for those who speak Spanish, don't have your kids watched.
Para continuar tu legado, hacer frente a los presos, seguir firmes por lo que sabemos que merecemos. Amor, igualdad, y los mismos derechos, y una vida digna. This war.
They pray for.
That's good for a start. Well, the translation came right there. So I will take it back to us, but oh man. Okay, so people, and that for just a quick summary for those who are just listening in, you have a bunch of these LGBTQ activists filling the cathedral, and they're giving this homage to this man who had lived his life as a woman and not just that, but as an atheist woman. So I don't know if he had been baptized. It is obviously the faithful's duty. Like, the faithful are can have a Catholic funeral, but this is not it. And on top of that, they were talking about how this guy is the mother of whores and also Santa Cecilia, which is what I call my grandma who's passed on. So Saint Cecilia automatically. And I want to say before I turn it to you, Nick, that the priest throughout was reminded that it was a service. It was not a funeral mass, but nonetheless, but did talk about very positively how they're going to see Cecilia again and all the great parts of Catholicism in the 21st century. So I just want to get your reaction because I know, Nick, that you have seen this, and I'm not trying to ruffle your feathers too terribly much, but obviously this is such a week for a contrast in what we're seeing in two different cathedrals and very big parts of the country.
It's so telling. I talked about this the other night on Anthony and Rob's show, Avoiding Babylon, and basically I think there's like three things that come to mind. One is, the fact is that this community knew that they could get away with this in some form or fashion. I think that that's one telling about the state of where things have gone on, is that people know that they can get away with this just egregious sacrilege, and they don't care, right? They don't care. And I think what people have to understand, and this is going to sound really controversial, but it's just the truth, is that these people have made themselves the enemies of Christ Church. Because they know that it's the truth. Just like, for instance, the Satanist crowd know deep down that it is Roman Catholicism is the true religion of our Lord Jesus Christ. And so therefore they will try to desecrate the Eucharist. In the same way, right, this community will strive to desecrate churches and religious memorabilia and imagery any way that they can. You see this, of course, with people who make these rainbow-colored rosaries, these rainbow-colored Madonnas, right? You see them, rainbow-colored stoles, all kinds of stuff, right? They're trying to mock our religion, which they would never do, of course, with a certain other
Islam.
Religion in the Middle East.
Yes, indeed.
With Islam, but they will do this with us because they know of how soft we've become. I think of my great ancestor, Saint Ferdinand III of Spain, and how he would have reacted most likely to these things, and just how your average Catholic would have reacted back in that time, or Saint Alfred the Great or Saint Louis the Ninth, right? How would they have reacted? So I think that that's just the first thing is, like, one, they knew they could get away with this. Two is the fact that the priest involved in the cathedral involved, whether or not they knew what their intentions were or not, right? Because there was, you know, a lot of debate about that. Of course, the diocesan statement itself, regardless of that, they should have really done their good background check and seen whom this person was. Because at the end of the day, if you find out, hey, this person, you know, is a man but says they're a woman, yeah, and they're well known for that, and they're a main leader in this community, probably not a good idea, right? Just probably not, especially if they're not practicing their religion, which clearly they're not by this person's manifest actions. And the third thing I would say is, you know, you see this in the video itself, but the coffin is draped with a white veil, right? A giving the presumption of celebration. And then by your own statement, you wisely pointed out that the priest goes on and just says, basically, you know, we can know that this person's smiling down on us, etc., giving the appearance that this person is in heaven. I want everyone to go and check out probably my most controversial video on YouTube, which is called "Is the Conciliar Synodal Church the Catholic Church?" And don't worry, it's not a Sede video. It's a shocking title, but it's not a Sede video. But it basically goes into this discussion on how this new orientation is truly, it meets all the marks of a new religion, and so therefore it's going to have a very different view of what Aristotle and Aquinas called the final cause, meaning the goal or the point of something, right? And so it's like the goal or the mission of the church is to give God glory by the saving of souls, right? So the mission of the church is to be missionary, going out and converting all the lost, right? We see this again, you know, explicitly in the traditional rite of baptism. The whole reason that the church does exorcisms is because when you're conceived, right, and born, you're born into original sin, and all souls that die, even with original sin only, are deprived of the beatific vision according to the dogma of the church, right? See Leon's II in Florence. But we exorcise them because we recognize that they're a child of the devil and they need to be converted to the religion of Christ. Is that what is going on inside of St. Patrick's? Even if we give all the charitable blankets we can to the situation, we have to realize that that is an egregious error by this priest on saying these things, because you have a multitude of sinners. There's people up there that are wearing drag. How do you not know what's going on? There's a multitude of sinners.
And it's not to unnecessarily besmirch the priest, although if you're a spiritual father, my opinion is that you can take it. But I wanted to share this next kind of clip, which is the priest's remarks. Because one would say, okay, well, maybe there's been a little hoodwinking or something, but this might be an opportunity, even for a priest who's not fire and brimstone, but this would be a moment, perhaps, for a priest to really turn the tables, to share the gospel message, the beauty of the truth of Jesus Christ. Because remember, it is through Christ, who is the way, the truth, and the life, that we are set free, that we are liberated. And there are people who suffer from gender dysphoria. There are people, a lot of people in the trans community, within a lot of detransitioners will tell you about the abuse, all these other kinds of things, right? So this is an example to share the gospel, to know that God creates people, male and female, to love, to be beautiful, right? He creates male and woman and for each other. And so I want to go through the priest comments here, because all those marks of heroic priesthood, we will see if they are on trial or not. So again, not to besmirch a priest, I'm not going to say his name or anything. Nobody sent hate mail to St. Patrick's or anything. But obviously, you just said, Nick, that the question of the conciliar church, right? By our fruits, we will know them. Is this a new religion? Well, Catholics, I'm going to let you decide. Here's what the priest says.
O God, whose nature is always to forgive and to show mercy, we humbly implore you for your servant, Cecilia, who we have called to journey to you, that since she helps and believes in you, grant that she may be led to our true homeland through the light and its everlasting joy. And may the Indian community love and receive and sing with each other, and have access to life-affirming health care and God's protection with secure housing. We pray to our Lord Jesus Christ, who was full of mercy.
So I apologize for people who are getting enraged. This is not the purpose of this, but I want to pause real quick, and just for our listeners who are listening, what we have is a woman now on the AMBO, and she's saying this. Obviously, I don't know. I haven't watched the full. Maybe that'll be fun, Nick. If we crack open a beer and we watch the full of the service one of these days, just to kind of see and have a good time. But fundamentally, she's on the AMBO, so I don't know what the order of battle was for, but you can hear she's talking about life-affirming healthcare, which is just a really lefty way of saying cutting off vital and God-made organs of people, and bolting and tacking on fake ones and everything. And also apparently housings in there too. So, and we're going to wrap this all, of course, into, we're going to invoke the name of our Lord Jesus Christ in this terribly blasphemous manner. So,
Lord, hear our prayer.
Okay.
For those of you listening, the priest is, people are waiting around. The priest is up there with a drag queen's up there as well. So you have a man dressed in drag as a woman.
I was great. We lost somebody that we could call no matter what, no matter what topic. But this lady worked so hard to make sure girls like me, boys like me are safe, are grounded, are rooted, got health care. That sex workers are free.
Sex workers is a lefty way of saying prostitutes. That's enough of that. but sex workers, of course, another left way of just saying prostitutes. So I guess it makes sense that they call her this great whore. So again, not to stir the mush for everybody. We're not hate channels, but we are, you know, these meany, very serious battlemen. Nick, you've done something very incredible, which is you've actually gone to rosary rallies against Satanists and stuff. So you're very attuned. I very much admire this about you. What our enemies are, and the reality is, it's just like when you take an oath for the Constitution, right, to protect the United States against enemies, both foreign and domestic. Well, this is the same for the church by the virtue of our baptism. We are to protect the church, the authentic church, the true church, the eternal Rome, from enemies, both foreign and domestic.
100%. And you know what's so sad about that is, like, the priest, again, not to disparage him, but like, he gets up and he gives this prayer, which it sounds like he's just giving a prayer from like the new ritual, and it sounds so presumptuous. It just assumes that the person is in heaven, but then they're throwing in this person's name, which it's like, how could you even say this statement in tandem with this person's name when you see that they're surrounded by drag queens and that you know that this is, if you will, a herald of their movement? And then, of course, to have, you know, lay people who are, you know, it sounds like open communists to give basically in the Lutheran style call and response prayers, a bunch of communist left wing propaganda statements. You know, this is it's egregious. And then the fact that the priest would even allow these people to come up into the sanctuary, right, where the sacrifice of the mass takes place, is truly egregious. But then when you, again, what's so interesting to me is that so many Catholics will get it righteously upset at this, right? Understandably so, but then will completely try to excuse away things like, for instance, Pope Benedict XVI giving an open Lutheran communion, right? Or Pope Francis in the last couple weeks, right, allowing an Anglican, you know, quote unquote, Eucharistic celebration to take place in St. John Lateran, right? And so when you wrap all these things together, as well as, of course, fiducia supplicans, right, that at least, you know, you can try to squeeze an Orthodox interpretation as best you can.
I've never been so proud to be African of some sort, by the way, that I have.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And what was so interesting to me, you know, is it's like, you see all of Africa comes out and basically says, yeah, we're not going to do this. We'll affirm, but by affirming the first part of this document, we have to deny the second part of this document, right? It's so schizophrenic. But then, of course, you see Rome, including the Holy Father, come out and say, you know, oh, the opposition to this is just basically some minority conservative sectarian group. I'm like, it's the entire continent, plus almost all the Eastern Catholic rites, plus a fair amount of Latin bishops. So when you coalesce all of this together, the only way I think that these people, right, thought that they could get away with this was, one, they just know how weak the conciliar church is, because for 60 years, it's giving the appearance of everyone's going to heaven, right? No one's giving sermons about the four last things. It's like, you know, again, average person who goes to the new mass, when was the last time that you heard a dedicated sermon on the topic of
death,
hell,
judgment,
right? Or that mortal sin leads to hell, right? It's very rare. And those new mass priests that do talk about that, notice how they have larger channels on YouTube, whereas like your average diocesan parish doesn't, because they're not saying anything really of substance. So they knew they could get away with this, but by getting away with this, they've defiled the cathedral. So what should happen? The bishop needs to not just come out and say, yeah, we need a massive reparation, but he needs to be really clear with his diocese where the church stands on this. Extremely clear. But what will happen? If he is really clear, he's going to get an email, right, a phone call from a certain congregation in Rome, which is saying, no, no, no. This is, again, why, again, I just keep going back to Lefebvre's right. It wasn't just about the Mass. It was also about the doctrinal seeds that were being planted in the 60s and 70s that have now blossomed. You know, you only get synodality by collegiality. You only get religious mass indifferentism through religious liberty. You only get these types of crazy prayer gatherings through ecumenism. It's the logical conclusion.
That's so completely true. And that's so very well said. And here's the thing at the core, and this is why I'm like, man, this priest is, as a priest, you're supposed to be guarding the liturgy. You're supposed to be guarding the church. I mean, the reality is, like, we know priests who, if someone burst in with a gun and said, give me the tabernacle, they'd say, no, shoot me. You know, we've seen so many heroic witnesses, just as men, right? Just as men who love what we do. When you associate the church with your family, you're not going to allow your family to come under attack. And again, exactly. I think that just stems down to this effeminacy that has unfortunately wrecked the priesthood, wrecked the religious life, and has obviously wrecked just general masculinity across the West. Men enslaved to their passions who don't want to stand up and do what's right, right? It's very unfortunate. We talk a lot about that. But I want somebody, but at the same time, what this shows, number one, is that we're only a decade, of course, behind Protestantism. And so congratulations for those who are going, well, they're just being inclusive and they're trying to, and look, they got people into the church and that's wonderful. Maybe someone touched it. It's like, okay, great. Look where the Episcopalians are, because that's exactly what this church is. If you told me this was Episcopalian, I'd be like, yeah, probably. I wouldn't believe it's Catholic. But the next thing is that the nice thing, and especially as trads, we know this, like becoming a traditional Catholic does not mean that I know there are people who are very prideful. Sure, that they exist everywhere. But becoming a traditional Catholic has not taught me to be more presumptuous or more feel good about myself. It's actually taught me more how I need the mercy of Christ, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not like a guy who deals with a lot of scrupulosity like that, but I'm a man who understands fundamentally that, like, God has created me for him. And my duty as his son is to respond in love. It's to turn away from sin, to live a life of sacramental grace. And as a result, the traditional Catholicism, the TLM, those forms of piety, devotion, everything, those are the strongest medicines against abortion, transgenderism, Satanism. And here's the thing, too. I want people who are deep sinners, who are trying. You ask me what medicine I'd give them. I'd give them the traditional Latin Mass. If you are struggling with same-sex attraction, go to the TLM. Talk to those priests. Right? People are not here to, we're not here to throw stones at you, right? We want your salvation. I want the salvation of my enemy, those who are my political, my social, my cultural, even at times my personal enemies. I mean, I really want that. For somebody who has gender dysphoria, who has lived a life far away as a prostitute, or has lived their life, believe that they're a woman when they're really a man. That's what God loves you so much and wants your salvation more than you even want that for yourself. But the solution is not to create God in our own image, because that's not satisfactory either. And this is why I point to Protestantism, Nick, because what we see this in Catholicism, right, especially the last 70 years. But in Protestantism, how many Protestant sects have tried to forge God in their own image? And they're hemorrhaging and they're confused and they're lost because it's ultimately not true. This is the 100%. Exact same strain here, and that breaks my heart that, I mean, maybe Cardinal Dolan will exercise and reconsecrate the cathedral, right? Judging by his statements, I don't know if that's going to happen, but we never know. But, you know, maybe you know my opinion, I'm sure. And that's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that, as you said earlier, that the reason why they've done this to our church, or to a cathedral of all places, is because they knew they could get away with it. And when you stand up and say that's wrong, it's us who'll be shouted down as a result.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Like, at the end of the day, one thing that you mentioned about a little bit earlier about just knowing who your enemies are, but yet wanting the conversion of your enemies, that's what we're called to by confirmation, right? So it's like, I've seen this in a few shows, so it's not really breaking news, but I'm going to make a whole video kind of showing the process, but I'm in the process of getting a conditional confirmation with one of the SSPX bishops. And the long story short is that my confirmation has a lot of interesting quasi things that make it at least concerning. But one thing that I like to emphasize is that, you know, in the traditional rite of confirmation, right, you receive the slap, right? And you receive it for many reasons. But one of them, according to the Baltimore Catechism, is like a soldier or a knight, right, who's receiving the slap. So you know your duty and you know the pain that's involved. Confirmation equips you with the power and the graces to go out into, in a holy and righteous way, wage war against the flesh, the world, and the devil, right? Oftentimes we can understand two of those. We're like, okay, yeah, I have my passions, right? My passions, you know, according to Thomas, right? They're not good or bad, but because of the fallen tendency of original sin and the concupiscence thereof, right? I'm always going to be bent toward this. And this is why I need to practice virtue and receive the sacraments and prayer to heal my nature. So we get that. We all know our own predominant fault that we take with us into the confessional each week. We obviously get the fight against the devil. We're like, hey, okay, I understand that. But then we don't understand oftentimes how the devil manifests through what's called the world. What is the world? The church is pretty clear in this when it comes to her ascetical and mystical theology. The world is not talking about planet Earth. It's not talking about the sunshine, the rainbows, the rabbits, the grass, whatever. It's not talking about even us humans in our own nature. What it's talking about the world is it's this system of anti-Christ, anti-God tendencies in society, in governments, in institutions that are fundamentally opposed to the mission and the social reign of Christ. So what are we as Catholics supposed to do? We're not supposed to just, as you know, I've tried to do at least with my audience, stand up and protest a drag show or protest a satanic invocation, but we're also supposed to take ground. And that's something, going back to your point on masculinity, that I think we've lost. We've gotten so used to the defeat over and over and over again, always figuring out, you know, is my church going to get shut down? You know, when is the bishop going to crack down? You know, when is the end of American society as we know it? You know, oh, I'm not going to vote in this November because it's already a foregone conclusion. We've taken so many black pills and we've become these creatures who are so beaten that we're sitting in a corner in the fetal position, unable to do anything productive for society or for Christ. That's why what we need to do is more than just, I think, what a lot of us, you know, trad influencers, if you will, have been recommending, where it's not that we need to focus in on all the evil, right, and just focus on that. Ultimately, the first thing we have to do is focus on our own spiritual lives, right? Tackling our predominant fault, going to Mass every Sunday, right? Going to penance throughout the week, right? Saying, doing little penances like on Fridays and Wednesdays, praying the rosary. That's all good. We also need to study our faith. You know, one thing you mentioned earlier about Episcopalians, when I went up to New England this week, I remember driving by all these churches, right? Quote unquote churches, of course. And they have rainbow flags outside of them or BLM flags or something, right? Communist banners and stuff like that. But then you look at their services online, they're all old white heads.
Yep.
Right? They're all ancient, right? They're all, you know, again, jokingly, but probably true, part of, you know, the teachers union. right? They are the classic WASPs, you know, who make $100,000 a year and are retired and their children are atheists, but yet they're still going to the inclusive quote unquote church. What we have to do is understand and memorize our catechism so that when we get together in parishes, it's not that we should just get together to fulfill an obligation, a good one, of course, on Sundays, but that we can organize. We can say, okay, I there's me, but then I have, you know, my friends, my five or six guy friends, or if you're a lady, my five or six female friends, etc. And what can I do to organize and change my society? Maybe we need to start small and say, okay, let's go down and protest the abortion mill. Let's go and protest this drag show. Like if you're like, okay, I don't know where these things are, just look up your city's name and type in the word pride after it into the Google search engine, and you'll find plenty of stuff going on.
Especially in Austin and in Denver, right?
Exactly. You'll find so much. So it's like, be creative. Think about like, okay, you know, we need to make signs. We need to make banners. We should go and pray the rosary. The rosary will change. Tangibly change what's going on around it. I've seen people physically run when we've brought out relics. I'm not even joking. Like, I have a friend who brought a relic of the true cross with him to one of these protests, and a group of Satanists who were across the road literally just took off after that. So there is power in the true religion, but we're hiding in our building. So be creative. Think about how we can organize. Think about things like, okay, how can I teach catechism to the children who are around me? I've taught catechism in Texas. I've taught catechism in Oklahoma. I've seen the fruits of bad catechesis in multiple states. It's universal. We need to get back to good, strong Baltimore catechetical memorization and explanation. So my whole point with all this is like, be creative and don't back down. You're a soldier for Christ. And when Christ returns, just like he talks about in the parable, what steward are you going to be? Are you going to be the just stewards who either increased the talents that our Lord gave him by 100-fold, by 60-fold, etc.? Or are you going to bury your light, like our Lord says, you know, putting a basket over the light? Are you going to bury your talent? Are you not going to be salt and light, and you're just going to hide? It doesn't do any good for society. And your, quote, friend next door, your neighbor, right, might be damned because of the lack of conviction that you have, right? So pray to the Lord, pray to Our Lady for grace, and get out there and change culture, because that's what we've got to do.
I could not have said it better myself, Nick, and especially since you have video evidence of your brave culture building. You know, I'm very, very appreciative of you. Yeah, that is the absolute, that's such a good button for our time together. So I'm going to have you on again real soon. We're going to have some fun. But Nick, it's always a pleasure. Listeners and viewers, I beg you, I actually decree by divine appointment. No, just kidding. But hey, Nick Cavazos, The Traditional Thomist, a great podcast, a great YouTube channel. I know you have some projects in the work, Nick, and I can't wait to see them start churning out, because the only way I can ever get through the Summa is by listening to it via audiobook. But I get too excited and don't take notes. So I'm looking forward to that new project of yours. But of course, please head on over, subscribe to his channel. That's The Traditional Thomist. You're on podcast sites like Spotify and stuff too, if I remember correctly. So also on YouTube, of course, is really, really great. And we've been neck and neck in subscribers. So if you subscribe to him, don't forget also to subscribe here to the Glad Trad podcast. Thank you to all of our channel members and also our patrons who help make this content possible. Go on and go over to patreon.com/gladtradpodcast. A lot of fun perks, and we're so appreciative. Or of course, just go ahead and hit the subscribe to the member for this channel. A lot of really, really great things. And we very much appreciate each and every one of you who've done that. Well, that has been absolutely awesome, Nick. Hey, until next time, God bless you and Mary keep you. Adios.